like the example I usually use, when I was young, I had hair. And then I started to lose it. And I was still, in my mind, somebody who had hair. So I let it grow long and I wrapped it around my head so I could be someone with hair. And then I always was aware of the way the wind was blowing. And I was like Rodin's thinker. I was always like this to hold my hair in place. And I was suffering. I was suffering because my mind was holding onto a model of who I was that I wasn't any longer. And finally, I let go. And I just decided that I am. And that just because the car is a little worn around the edges, there was a great moment. I think this happened since I was in Devon last night. I was invited to give an address. I may have talked about this in Bath, I think, the other day. I was invited to give to speak at Saks Fifth Avenue, which is a very Tony department store in Beverly Hills, California. And I was speaking on behalf of La Prairie Cosmetics, which prepares a cream for aging, to avoid aging. Okay, it's a very fancy cream, and they have a sanitarium in Switzerland where you can be repumped and rebuilt and revitalized and toned up, and you can be eternally young, dead or alive. And So my friends all said, well, you certainly aren't going to do this. I mean, you don't believe in these kinds of creams. I mean, you think aging should be, you know. But they were offering me $12,000 for basically a 15-minute slot, which, now I don't sell out. I mean, it's not that kind of look, but I raise money for the Seva Foundation, which does cataract surgery among the poor in Nepal and India, and a surgery that gives somebody back their sight and thus their working capacity in their life costs, well, it's been going up, but it's about $35, $40 now. And if you divide $40 into 12,000, that's a lot of human suffering that's alleviated. And I thought, could I compromise my principles to do this? After all, Christ went and spoke to the, you know, why shouldn't I? You know, like, good enough for Christ, what the hell? So I thought, I can go to Beverly Hills and to Saks Fifth Avenue. I'll teach Dharma, it doesn't matter. I had given a lecture on aging, and they wanted sort of some intellectual content to this luncheon. So I was the rent and intellect. And so I was on the program with they had these tables. They had the 200 largest customers, best customers of Saks, personal invitation to come to luncheon. And then La Prairie had a cosmetologist, whatever they are, at each somebody that was at each table to help them with what creams they would need to protect themselves. And so the person that spoke before me was the skin nutritionist and a doctor. And she got up and she said, let's run an experiment. She said, would you all put your hands in the middle of the table? And then she said, if you take a little piece of skin and hold it for 5 seconds, she counted, and then she said, now let it go. And the rate at which it goes back will show how vital your skin is and how healthy you are. And so we all did this in the middle of the table, and when I let go, my skin didn't go back. I mean, in fact, it's still there. It would be there if I didn't push it back, you know. And they were all horrified. I mean, it was just like I had walked in without my pants on or something. I mean, this was... But what disturbed them even more was that I didn't care. They sent me a big box of creams, I want you to know. I mean, they really felt that I was in extreme, extremis. But I began to see, I looked and I saw, again, so much suffering. Because the thing about aging is that it, like everything else in nature, is sort of built into the system. And when you pitch yourself against the system, the nature of things, you would think that somebody would be smart enough to see that inherent in that would be suffering. To pitch yourself against the way in which it all unfolds. I mean, this body is decaying. I can watch it decay. It's really, now I took care of my father when he was dying at 90, and now I can see in my hands the beginning of those hands that I knew holding his hand as he was dying. I can see the loose skin and the veins and the spots and the, oh God, it's so beautiful. Instead of, aging. Now the culture, I just contracted to do my next book on aging. Because the dysfunctional mythology around aging is one of the creators of so much suffering and the undermining of such a deep resource of wisdom in the world, the way in which we deal with aging. So the suffering, as the Buddha pointed out, is connected to the way the mind holds on to certain things that are disparate from the way something is. Now, knowing that, to really understand the Buddha's Four Noble Truths, the way in which one can let go of the clinging of mind by the meditative practice, by drawing the awareness back from the identification with thought, etc., the kind of things we've been talking about, the appreciation of that makes you finally realize that every experience you have of suffering, not the one, you don't ask for it, but the ones that just naturally come, you can immediately begin, if I am suffering, where can I look to alleviate my suffering? Well, if I'm suffering because I'm hungry, I can eat. But if I am suffering, one of the places I must look is how my mind is defining the reality to create the suffering. Like, pain is pain, suffering is something else. You can have a pain and not suffer, or you can have a pain and suffer. Pain is strong stimulation, is what it is. I like to go to the dentist and say, I don't want any Novocaine. And he's drilling, and I'm going, ah! He says, is it painful? I say, yes. He says, you want Novocaine? No. I mean, I'm a nut, but I'm attempting to take the pain and play with it to see what my tolerance is before it becomes suffering. Because pain is just pain, whether I make it into suffering or not. And I really realized when I was in the villages of India, I was living with people that were living so far below the poverty level of the United States. They were living with so little, and when I looked in their hearts and in their eyes and in their beings, they were suffering a hell of a lot less than the middle class was in America. Now, I don't want to romanticize it and say, oh, wonderful, poverty's great and all that, but I could see. And the experience that was so profound for me was in Benares, in the city of dying in India. This story that I've told many times. When I went to Benares immediately after I got to India, the first time in 1967, I was appalled. I mean, there were literally tens of thousands of people who had a loincloth, that's all, and a begging bowl, and they had just they had a little pouch on their loincloth, which had enough money in it for the wood for their burning, for the burning of their body. And they had cancer and leprosy and all of that, and the horror of that drove me back to my hotel. I couldn't stand it. I went back to the hotel, and I was in such pain, I got under the bed. That's how caught I was, because I had these traveler's checks, and I had, all this good stuff from the West, and I couldn't stand the pain. Shortly thereafter, I met my guru, and then I spent the winter in a temple, and I began to study Hinduism, and I began to experience that the people I was living with in India, for the most part, were living in a very different reality than I was. They were living in a different plane of consciousness. And I went back to Benares in the spring, and I met the same people, but now my reactivity, I wasn't hardened, my heart was very open, but I was appreciating that these people had lived their lives, because they lived in a reincarnational reality, they had lived their lives with the hope that they might die in Benares, which is the most auspicious place to die spiritually. And they had made it. They were going to die in Benares. And these people were realizing their dream. I was focused on their matchstick legs and their sores. They were focusing on what that meant to them. And when I quieted down enough to look into their eyes and to be with them, I saw them looking at me with pity. Because they saw me as like a hungry ghost wandering through the universe with no place to be at home. And they knew just where they were. And they were at home. Now, this is not, as I say, I don't want to romanticize it, and it's all still plenty of work for Mother Teresa, but I just want to say that there are different planes of reality at which one understands what's going on. And these people were not suffering in the way I projected into them suffering was. So understanding the way the mind relates to the nature of suffering leads one to take one's own sufferings and see them as an opportunity to examine the way the mind clings. The way the mind clings. Like the whole process of getting old and feeble and dependent. Now, people that have been fiercely independent say, I hate being dependent. But I work with a lot of people that are ill and dying, and I watch some people who do the dependency number with such grace that they end up feeding everybody that's taking care of them. I watch people that are old and frail who need to be taken care of, and they end up being a gift to everybody that's taken care of them. Because they are not at odds with themselves. This is the moment. I mean, at the moment when I was changing my father's diapers as he had changed mine, people could say, oh, how disgusting. To him and me, it wasn't disgusting at all. It was like a beautiful completion of a cycle. I mean, his mind had turned quite a bit to the point where he could enjoy it. But at that moment, he was absolutely radiantly happy and peaceful and relaxed. And that was a guy who had never been happy like that. I mean, he always was independent. And then something gave up. And he turned into this other being, and he just massaged his body, and he just smiled all the time. I think that when we get to those edges where we say, well, I couldn't handle that, or that's, I'm not doing that, or you look, there is the root of your suffering, where the mind is in relation to the phenomenal field. I mean, I didn't marry and I didn't have children. Some people say, oh, isn't that too bad? It may be too bad I didn't marry and I didn't have children. That's just the way it is. I could make myself miserable about it. Hello, I'm somebody that didn't marry and didn't have children. Poor thing, you know, I could milk it for all it's worth. Yeah. The reason the book on aging is such fun for me to think about now at 63 is that this is my curriculum now for the next whatever number of years are remaining, to see if I can dance through this one without denial, without closing down, without suffering, without panic. Watching the way in which the society disempowers me, watching the way that my energies are less reliable, watching the way my patterns of life change, watching the way I have to economically probably live more carefully, watching a lot of things happen, and new moment, new moment, new moment. Instead of being taken struggling into every turn of circumstance. Now, to understand those Buddhist teachings about suffering doesn't mean that you can then use that as a rationalization for other people's suffering. Say, well, they're suffering because of their minds. And that forces you to deal with this interesting paradox. That you understand that for an awakened person, suffering is actually grace, because suffering shows you where the mind is caught. And in that sense, it is an extremely useful gift. But you can't go up to somebody who's suffering and say, it's a useful gift. You really don't have any moral right to lay it upon another person, even though it is the root cause of suffering. And it wouldn't work anyway. You've got, and this is a really interesting one. It was really hard for me to recognize that you don't have a moral right to try to take away somebody else's suffering. What you can be is an environment that is spacious enough where they can let go of their suffering if they're ready. But it is not your right. If they say, I am suffering and what I need is a new car, and you say, that won't satisfy you. Or take your need for a new car and turn it into grace. Probably won't work. It probably won't work. It probably won't work. It might, but it probably won't work. And I think what you do is you relieve suffering in whatever way you can. And for different people, suffering is different. For one person, it's hungry, you give them food. For another person, you invite them to fast. Same thing of not eating. The appreciation of the levels at which suffering is created, and know that the more your awareness is extricated from identification with a finite time and space locus, with your body and your personality, the more your awareness permeates and is part of what is, out of that quality of being arises a compassion. Because it's us suffering. It's the suffering in the universe. And just as if your body were suffering, you would do something. If your left hand were suffering, your right hand would pull it out of the fire or do something to help it. So you do what you can to relieve suffering. Because it's no longer their suffering. It's no longer her suffering or his suffering. It's the suffering. And it's no longer your compassion. It's the compassion. And you begin to see the dance of suffering and compassion. And you're just part of the dance. So, what you can develop through the awareness that expands to embrace the mystery of the universe, that expands to allow for the mystery of the universe, and allows for the appreciation of the beauty and awe of the law of the universe, those planes of consciousness balance and give perspective to the plane of consciousness in which you are a separate entity, in which your individual heart is breaking when you look at the suffering. It gives you a perspective that allows your heart to break again and again and again and again. In the work that I do with people that are ill and dying, it has taken me a long time to understand how deeply, because I didn't quite know how to deal with it, how deeply I fall into love with each of these people. And how attendant to that quality of falling into love is the pain of the loss of the beloved. And while there is the pain of the loss of the beloved, there is also the quality of being with that being independent of loss. It's, I'll miss your form, but our essences are here. Where are we going to go? So I don't have a formula to keep your heart from breaking. I have a formula to keep you from getting so caught in your broken heart that you turn bitter, cynical, and close yourself down from life. Because I think the art form is to stay wide open and vulnerable in life and sit with the mystery and with the awe and with the pain. Sit with it all. Just read the newspaper. You want suffering? Just read the newspaper. And watch what happens to your heart with each item. Rwanda, Bosnia, rape, theft, exploitation, etc. Just watch. To read a paper meditatively is a really interesting experience. To find a spaciousness and then read the newspaper as these phenomena arising that are part of the human condition. What the human condition is at the moment has in it greed, it has lust, it has fear, it has anger, it has violence, it has all of that stuff in it. It also has beauty, tenderness, care, joy, play. I'll tell you, if you think you can be happy by denying the pain and sadness in the world, I'll tell you that isn't true happiness. If your happiness only comes like, let's not think about Rwanda today so we can be happy. The sun is out, let's not think about Rwanda. That's like that thing as a child I used to say, okay, now you got to promise me you'll do what I say. All right, don't think about a rhinoceros. All right, I won't think about a rhinoceros. And you can't not think about the rhinoceros unless you have incredible discipline. The cost of armoring your heart against what is more costly than you may appreciate. And to open to what is and allow the pain. I've found that in that wonderful catchphrase, be here now, which I've been growing into for the last 30 years, since 20 years, that here now has within it a richness that is enough. And when somebody says to me, Ram Dass, are you happy? People come up and say, are you happy? And I stop and think about it, look inside. I mean, every time a question comes, there's a good chance to really ask it. Say, yeah, I'm happy. Somebody else comes up and says, Ram Dass, are you sad? Think about it. Yeah, I'm sad. Ramdas, are you hopeful? Yeah, I'm hopeful. Ramdas, is it hopeless? Yep, it's hopeless. It's extraordinary. I mean, I realized in just honestly answering these questions that all of the stuff was present. Now, imagine what thickness there is to a moment in time that has everything present. This moment has in it the people in Rwanda. It doesn't not have them here. This moment has the richness and thickness of the broken heart, of the joy of the mother and father holding their new baby, of the rose in bloom, of the heartache of grief, of the loss of a long-term loved one. It has all of it in it. And it's thick, it's thick, it's thick with just living truth. And to be part of that is to really be like living spirit within the system. There is a line in the Tao that says, truth waits for eyes unclouded by longing. When you wish it were different, you can't see what is. You can't see what is. And the expanding of ourselves to embrace, to keep embracing, to keep embracing. Embracing into ourselves. Instead of, I'm this fragile little thing, keep away from me, I can't stand that. Don't get near me. I don't want to deal with that suffering today, thank you. I've got to protect myself. Versus, Not long ago, I took a chemical, a 9-minute acid trip, because I experiment with my consciousness when the opportunity presents itself. And in that, I turned into this huge woman. She was black. She was naked, sitting like this, had great breasts. She was reaching out and drawing all of the children, all of the beings who were all children, into herself. And she was gorging on it. I was gorging on it. It was like, And the people that I was with were running for a bucket, thinking I was about to vomit. And I was gorging on it, and at the same moment, I was in absolute ecstasy. I was in absolute ecstasy. And I saw it was the ecstasy of not turning myself off to the life around me, to all of it, to what is. And it scares the hell out of me. Because to bear the unbearable, you die. Who you are dies into being it. You are compassion. You don't have compassion, you are compassion.